Welcome to the Agency of the Month, sponsored by Ardent MC on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This month's agency is the Department of Homeland Security.
I'm Gillian Brockhill. Our guest today is Dan Gerstein, Deputy Undersecretary at the DHS Science and Technology Directorate. Mr. Gerstein, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So first, for our listeners who may not know, could you briefly explain what the Science and Technology Directorate does?
Sure. So first, let me start off with the Department of Homeland Security. As you're well aware, the Department of Homeland Security is the newest cabinet-level department. It's about 10 years old. In fact, we'll be celebrating our 10th anniversary in March. We came from 22 different organizations, and each having their own cultures and their own way of doing business. And so we're coming together as a department. We are about 230,000 people in the department itself, and then another 3.5 million or so when you add all of the first responder community and all those who do work in critical infrastructure protection. Now, the Science and Technology Directorate is a very unique organization within the Department of Homeland Security. In fact, we're really a cross-cutting capability, and we provide the scientific, engineering, and analytical support for the Department of Homeland Security. And in this role, what we try to do is develop what we call our value proposition, which is we try to be operationally focused, we try to bring innovation, and we try to build partnerships. That's very important. So in terms of operational focus, our goal is to work with our components, like FEMA, like the Secret Service, and we try to help bring forward operational solutions that will assist them as they do their work. When we talk innovation, we have the ability to think long-term, to think about possibilities. And because we're not an operational entity, we do have that flexibility. And then building partnerships. And in partnerships, we build across the interagency. We work with Department of Defense and Department of Health and Human Services, Department of Agriculture, all the different departments. We also work very closely with industry. We work with academic institutions. We work with international partners, and all of this designed to bring forward the best operational and innovative solutions for the department.
Great. And so what are the top priorities for S&T right now?
So in talking about science and technology priorities, we've settled on five basic priorities. First is biodefense. Second is cyber. Third is homemade explosives. The fourth is first responders, and the fifth is resilience. Now, those are in no particular order. They're all very important to us. And along those same lines, what we've decided is that our priority is to bring forward both technological capabilities and knowledge products to support with acquisition support and operational analysis, and also to help with business process reforms and gaining efficiencies.
And so let's go a little deeper into those priorities. First, what are you doing in biodefense right now?
So in biodefense, we have a lot of ongoing programs, everything from our recent foot and mouth disease vaccine, which was conditionally approved by the United States Department of Agriculture, is now commercially available. That's a big deal for us. We're also doing a very important program in conjunction with the Department of Defense on rapid diagnostics, and this could be a game changer. If you ever think about when you go into an emergency room and you're issued a flu pack or a cold pack, and you really don't have a definitive test, if you had a rapid diagnostic test, you would actually be able to get a very rapid diagnosis and be able to tell, is it a viral infection, is it a bacterial infection? And so this is one of the areas that we're working in as well.
Great. And how about cybersecurity?
Well, cybersecurity, of course, is an emerging area, and there's a lot of great work going on there. Let me give you an example of one of our big success programs. We had something that we called domain name server security. Every time you go out to a website, you want to make sure that you are actually hitting the website that you intend. And so what DNSSEC does is it gives you some degree of assurance that when you go out to that website, you're actually accessing where you intend. We're also doing work with trying to ensure that we have things like active defenses in the cybersecurity system. So we're looking at how can you better align your capabilities so that you're able to protect the cyber network.
Great. And how about homemade explosives?
Well, homemade explosives is a major area for us. When you talk about homemade explosives, we're talking about those sorts of explosives capabilities that are created using, in many cases, just household available goods that are put together with oxidizers and energizers in such a way as to cause an explosion. And so we're worried about very small amounts of these types of materials being able to do catastrophic damage. And so part of what we're doing in explosives is our characterization work, trying to understand what the different types of explosive materials are capable of doing so that we can both detect as well as do prevention activities.
And what are you working on for first responders?
Well, first responders, we have a variety of different capabilities we're working on, including thinking about the command and control, the way in which the first responders are able to actually communicate, how they share situational awareness with each other. It's not enough that one locality understands what's happening. It must also understand what's happening around it. They must also understand what's happening at the state level. And so we try to work to connect communities and to assist and give first responders the automated command and control tools. We also have a lot of work ongoing with regard to first responder gear. So we're worried about whether or not they are able to effectively fight fires. We found that much of the gear they had was so heavy, and it caused heat casualties. So we're trying to get new types of materials, working in conjunction with the Department of Defense here, to ensure that we can better support the first responder community.
And now I understand that this fifth priority, resilience, is a new one. Why did you decide to add that, and how are you working on resilience at S&T?
So we've been thinking about adding a resilience piece for a while, but I think that Superstorm Sandy really caused us to say now is the time that we need to do this. And what we did was we developed our resilience systems division that is focused on bringing about both the prevention, protection, mitigation, as well as response and recovery activities that will make communities more resilient and will allow for better weathering of storms.
You're listening to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio. Our guest today is Dan Gerstein, Deputy Undersecretary at the DHS Science and Technology Directorate.
From the tropical island of Maui to the top of Capitol Hill, Ardent MC, a hub zone contractor, solves difficult problems. Did you know that a hub zone firm can provide systems integration, agile software development, and program management services to implement complex situational awareness systems? The Department of Homeland Security understands the value. Since 2003, hub zone firm Ardent MC has been a key partner in delivering the department's common operational picture solution, which allows DHS to move information throughout the agency so the right person has the information to make the right decision when supporting state, local, and federal emergency response incidents. Working with DHS, the project was recently awarded the 2012 GCN Magazine Program of the Year. Ardent MC utilizes its HubZone certification to promote technology and employment in underutilized areas like their Maui Software Development Center, which offers a 14-hour engineering day, giving their partners access to their expertise longer. Ardent MC is known for taking the chaos out of complexity. Visit ardentmc.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio. Our guest today is Dr. Dan Gerstein, Deputy Undersecretary at the DHS Science and Technology Directorate. How are the current budget pressures affecting S&T?
Well, again, let me take you back a little bit and go to fiscal year 10. In fiscal year 10, we had a fairly robust budget climate, and then as we moved into fiscal year 12, it was a very difficult time for us. In fact, we saw a 56% reduction in our research, development, and innovation accounts. And certainly that has a major impact. And so we had to think differently about the way we were doing business, about the way we were contributing to the Homeland Security enterprise. Just in our own portfolio, for example, we went from about 250 projects down to about 75 projects. And to make change of that magnitude, what you have to do is you have to think differently about the work you're doing. And we did that in a couple of different ways. First, we developed our value proposition. We had to ask what was important. I already talked about that in the last segment. We also took a look and said, what are the priorities that we'll be looking at? Again, we talked a little bit about our five priorities. And then the other thing we did, which I think has been very important to being able to manage through this very difficult budget climate, was development of a portfolio review process. And in that portfolio review process, we were able to look at our projects and say which ones are not performing to the level they should, which need to be retooled so that they would be better and have a better opportunity to transition to operational capability. And in that way, we did make some tough calls, and it was a very difficult time. We hope that fiscal year 13 and on to 14 will be better years.
Can you go a little deeper into that portfolio review process and tell me a specific example of a project that had to be either cut or retooled and how you decided that?
Well, so one very good example of a project that we had to rethink was our tunnel detection. And, in fact, if you've ever been to the southwest border, you know the tunnel detection is a major problem, and Customs and Border Protection is working very hard to solve that problem. And, in fact, that was a program that we had to, for 1 year, halt while we waited for additional funding. We've now gone ahead, because that was so important, and restarted that program. But it just points to the significance of budget implications when you have to take very large reductions.
What is tech foraging, and how is S&T using it to maximize its budget?
So technology foraging is not necessarily a word that we coined at S&T. In fact,
What would you rather call it?
No, I think technology foraging is a good word. But I see everybody in the community now using the same sorts of thing. And it's the idea that we have to share the work that's already gone on within the government. Rather than pay for it two and three times, we have to find out what else is out there, who else has already done work in a mission space, and how can we then bring that information to us to make our projects more effective, to get them to transition sooner. When I think about tech foraging, I really think about three basic components. The first is understanding the state of a particular technology, getting a sense of what has already been accomplished. The second major component is finding capabilities that can either be quickly adapted or can either be infused directly, incorporated directly into DHS component operations. And then the third one is where you forage to find potential partners, where you can actually work together. And so for us, tech foraging has really been a lifeblood. It's allowed us to maximize the resource. And I think that's really important to be good stewards of our resources.
And how exactly are you communicating with other agencies about what you're each developing and how they can help one another?
Well, that varies across agencies. But we have meetings, for example, in the biodefense community where we get together and we talk about what we're doing on a regular basis across the interagency with all the different players who are working in this very crowded space. And it is a very collegial group. So, you know, everybody from the health community and health and human services to the Department of Defense, the intelligence community, and we all share ideas and we talk about the work that, needs to be done and what has been done. So in this way, we're able to better get to operational outcomes.
You're listening to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio. Our guest today is Dr. Dan Gerstein, Deputy Undersecretary at the DHS Science and Technology Directorate.
From the tropical island of Maui to the top of Capitol Hill, Ardent MC, a hub zone contractor, solves difficult problems. Did you know that a hub zone firm can provide systems integration, agile software development, and program management services to implement complex situational awareness systems? The Department of Homeland Security understands the value. Since 2003, hub zone firm Ardent MC has been a key partner in delivering the department's common operational picture solution, which allows DHS to move information throughout the agency so the right person has the information to make the right decision when supporting state, local, and federal emergency response incidents. Working with DHS, the project was recently awarded the 2012 GCN Magazine Program of the Year. Ardent MC utilizes its HubZone certification to promote technology and employment in underutilized areas like their Maui Software Development Center, which offers a 14-hour engineering day, giving their partners access to their expertise longer. Ardent MC is known for taking the chaos out of complexity. Visit ardentmc.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio. Our guest today is Dr. Dan Gerstein, Deputy Undersecretary at the DHS Science and Technology Directorate. How can contractors and businesses best work with S&T?
So let me start out by saying that I think industry partnerships are absolutely essential for what we do, and we have a great deal to learn from the private sector. And I would particularly say in some of these new fields, these emerging fields, it's really relevant. When you talk about cybersecurity, when you talk about biodefense, the government is not the leader in these industries. And so it really does behoove us to work very closely. One of the things that we're trying to do at S&T is to have a more continuous dialogue with industry. And to that end, we've started something called a webinar series. And the webinar series is going to bring forward a variety of different topics. Anything from just general information sharing on a topic that might be of interest all the way through to things dealing with requests for information or requests for proposals, RFIs and RFPs, as well as for looking at transition partners. And by that I mean we need partners to help transition the gear that we work on, the technologies that we work on. And to do that, we need a commercial entity to help, and that's very important. So we are working on bridging these gaps and sharing information. We also have a variety of tools that are already in existence. For example, we have long-range broad-area announcements where industry can look and see that we have certain topic areas that we're very interested in. We also have our Small Business Innovation Research, or SBIR, which, again, is focused on bringing small businesses and innovation together and helping us achieve our goals in working to bring forward great technology. And, you know, we also have things like our corporate repository where we're trying to better understand what's out there. This is also part of our technology foraging and this continuous communication. Let me give an example, though, why it's so really important to have this continuous dialogue. We have some technologies, an example being resilient electric grid. This is a superconducting cable that can be used to repair or can be installed in the event of an electrical outage, say in Superstorm Sandy. And, you know, what we're looking for there are commercial partners that we can work with who would want to adopt this, who would be able to have a commercial purpose for using and incorporating this cable. So, you know, we really depend on industry very much for ultimately transitioning our capabilities where they will be able to make a difference.
And back to that webinar series, when does that start?
Well, we've actually started, and we've been doing a number of internal. We're about to have another webinar in about a week and a half, and we continue to work with trying to get the word out on what we are working on, what our priorities are, and those areas where we might be able to work with industry.
And you also work closely with universities, which house your centers of excellence. What are those, and what are you working on there?
So centers of excellence are an absolutely tremendous entity. What we have here are 9 centers of excellence. And they're across a variety of different areas. We have some related to borders and maritime, some related to agricultural biodefense, and some related to human biodefense activities. We have some related to storm surge, for example. And what we're doing with these is they're organized into these 9 centers, and they have approximately 209 universities that are starbursted off of the 9 centers, and they work collaboratively to solve real-world problems. So some great technologies and great capabilities have come out of these. In one particular case, we have a storm surge predictor that was done collaboratively. The 2 co-leads here are Jackson State University in Mississippi and North Carolina Chapel Hill, and they were able to predict for Hurricane Irene and most recently for Hurricane Sandy what the surge was going to look like and be able to advise people to take appropriate action so that they would be out of the way. In one particular anecdote, they were actually able to advise the Coast Guard that their headquarters would be underwater if they didn't move the headquarters. And they did tell this to the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard followed suit and was able to continue operations. But it gives you some idea of just how much we're getting from these centers of excellence.
Another integral component is working with your own laboratories and outside laboratories. How are you doing that?
So we actually have five laboratories that are within S&T. We have two that are dedicated to biodefense, one focused on forensics and threat characterization, another one focused on agriculture that we work in conjunction with the United States Department of Agriculture. We also have one dedicated to urban issues, specifically science and technology issues. It's up in Manhattan. We have another that does chemical, and then still another that does explosives. And what we do at these labs is we try to bring forward, again, solutions that will be helpful for the Homeland Security enterprise. We also are very closely aligned with the Department of Energy laboratories, the national laboratories, and we work very closely as we try to bring forward solutions. You know, our laboratories were all laboratories that we have that I'm talking about are actually designed to be able to work very large, complex, multidisciplinary problems, and the DOE labs are really at the forefront of trying to work those types of problems. And so we depend on them heavily for support.
And what advice would you give to students and young people interested in working in cybersecurity? Why should they work for DHS?
So let me start by saying DHS is a great place to work. Great people, toughest challenges, and a chance to do something really important for the nation. So I would encourage all to come and work for us in cybersecurity. Now, looking at cybersecurity, it's also a great field, and it's one of these growing fields, and every day there are more and more challenges. It's a national problem, and it's something that we have to solve collectively. There are some real shortages in cybersecurity. So for young people who are thinking about a career, it's a great way to ensure that you're going to have a job after you go through your education. And one of the things that I would encourage is this idea of STEM education. Science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. It's so critical to be able to have those skills when you're thinking about working in cybersecurity. And so I think it's a great place to work in DHS, and I think cybersecurity is a super field to be in.
Great. And what lies ahead for S&T itself in the next year and in the next 5 years?
So I think that S&T is going to continue to grow and become an integral part of the Department of Homeland Security. First, I would say that we've gone from just delivering technologies to be able to deliver technologies and knowledge products to helping with business process reforms and acquisition support and operational analyses. All of these things are going to contribute and continue to contribute to the Homeland Security enterprise and the components. And so I think we're going to continue along that path, and we're going to become more relevant to the operational components.
Great. Dr. Gerstein, thanks for joining us on Agency of the Month. Dr. Dan Gerstein is Deputy Undersecretary of the DHS Science and Technology Directorate. I'm Gillian Brockell.
You've been listening to the Agency of the Month, sponsored by Ardent MC on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This month's agency is the Department of Homeland Security. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month. Agency of the Month, Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.